Welcome to episode 31 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is April 29th, 2012. I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my broster, James Furlough.
Hey, good to be here yet again.
Sweet, yeah. This is, for those of you that aren't listening to our outtakes, this is take two. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. James got a short disclosure for us before we get into the heart of the show.
So I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of their opinions, and so I should always say I. And if I accidentally say we when referring to HP, I meant to say I.
All right. Sounds good. I work for a company that we're probably not going to talk about, so don't worry about it. if you'd like to follow us, and please follow us, and we're pretty awesome, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
Nice. You can also follow the show where James and I will comment in that Twitter, or we'll just comment to that Twitter, so it's a great place to find out what's going on. The handle for the show is at Furlough Bros. You can also go to furloughbros.com. That has all of our links to everything, including all of our podcasts, links that we talk about during the show, great articles. It's an awesome site, well designed, if I might say so. you can also go onto Facebook, follow us there, like everything we do, or go to Google Plus and plus one us. And since not very many people are there, no one will probably see it. But hey, at least you'll know you did it. cool. So we didn't really talk about this offline, but do we want to give a little preamble to what we're going to do today?
Yeah, we do. So I guess okay. For starters, we're trying a new way of recording things. I did some experimenting yesterday to try to get it down from using two computers down to one computer, and I think I was successful. But as Matthew pointed out, this is already round two because Google had some sort of server crash thingy and was like, we're done right at the intro. So we got our fingers crossed on that.
They knew we were going to make fun of Google Plus and try to cut us off early.
Oh, I guess, yeah. So that's kind of exciting. I'm using a few different programs to make it all happen, which is cool. But the thing that Matthew was actually referring to is we're going to try a new show format today. So bear with us as we feel our way through it. Because we've never done this before, but we hope that it will make the show more, you know, entertaining and accessible to even more people. The basic thing that we're going to do is we're going to break the show into two parts. The first part, which we keep saying will last 15 minutes, but it could be a half hour, is we're going to run through the news that we thought was interesting this week. Like almost like headlines, brief, specific, think SNL type of headlines thing, but not nearly as funny.
Right.
And then what we're going to do is break into, we'll actually dive deeper into some of those, bigger stories that we read throughout the week. And those will be the longer conversations that you've come to know and love from us. So the hope and the goal of that is to have it be in the first part of the show. You can get your daily fix of here's everything that's going on. And then
your weekly fix.
Yep. Your weekly fix. Wait, you're not gonna listen to it every day. Just that first part.
Every day, just to really ingrain it.
Yeah, and then you'll get that. Hopefully, a deeper discussion. Of course, now we're running the risk of us picking topics that people they're like, no, I wanted to hear about this other one. Why did you skip it?
Yeah.
Which
could happen. So This is the thing. You know, we've got tons of places to comment that we're constantly checking, whether it be Twitter or furloughbros.com or Facebook or Google Plus. I mean, we're all over the place. So please, if you decide we skipped a topic that and you hate us for it, tell us, and we'll come back and give you our opinions. If you don't like the format, let us know. If you love the format, please. Sure, everything all right over there, James?
Yeah, I'm good. Why?
Okay, because there's a little bit of fumbling going around.
My cord got wrapped around my microphone. I was trying okay. to gingerly remove it, but it didn't work, obviously.
All right. Cool. But you know, if you like it, please share it and let us know that you like it. If you hate it, you know, that's good information.
Keep
too.
Keep it to yourself. So, oh, no. Yeah. Let us know.
Privately. Yeah, feel free to get a hold of us and yeah, let us know your opinion. But cool. So I'm ready for this, James. You ready for it?
Yeah, sure. Ready. I am. So and we're just gonna go by, you know, day of the week type of thing. You know, as stories came up. That's literally the sorting order. And the reason is, I don't know. It is. Yep. So
that's the way God arranged the days of the week, so that's the way we're gonna do it.
Yeah, there you go. So for the start of the week, the very first thing that I thought was interesting was YouTube launched its AdWords for video. So it's actually going to hopefully maybe start making money off of YouTube, which I'm pretty sure they're already making money. But the important part is it's like an AdWords style. So people like us, small businesses, can make a movie and then put it on the AdWords. And so you don't have to have a big budget.
So, okay, say this. Okay, explain this to me again because I don't really understand. So you'll be able to watch YouTube videos in AdWords, or there will be AdWords YouTube?
There will be, so they're applying the AdWords model to advertisements on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, so AdWords will, so the way that AdWords works is people can create their own ads, you know, like you get three lines really to create an ad, and then you submit it and it runs through the Google machine and all works. The current way that YouTube works is like you got to go through a special process and you got to have like a big budget and to make some sort of video ad. And Google's whole thing is like, it's gotten cheap enough and, you know, you guys can do it good enough now. Well, we're going to turn it into a self-serve model. Like AdWords.
Okay, so it's actually there. As I was going to say, there's words all over your YouTube videos. It's obnoxious.
No,
but you're saying small third party, we could make a little video that would pop up for 30
yep.
seconds before.
Exactly.
Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. We might have to do that if it's not obnoxiously priced.
Yeah, well, the obnoxious price is making the video. Running it is just, that's probably, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it'd be super easy for us. We just, we would make a cheap video. I mean, come on.
Yes.
Let's be real.
I love it. Another thing that happened this week, kind of a big deal. This was, it was actually two things. The first one was Dropbox made some improvements to their product, which I use every single day. I would almost say like almost every single hour of my life, except for when I'm sleeping. I use it a lot. It actually stores every single file that I have.
What?
Yeah. Well, not excluding music and pictures.
Okay.
It has every single file.
All of your data takes less than 5 gigs.
If that's all I had. No. Well, I have 6 gigs. I don't keep ginormous spreadsheets and data just sitting around. You know, they're all Word documents and whatever. So they made it now where you can share links of your stuff, like, and not just in the public folder, but like I could share a link of a document I made, and then you could see it right in the browser and
nice.
Just look at it. You don't actually have to download it anymore, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
And they were all doing this in preparation because the other thing that happened was Microsoft released updates for their SkyDrive, which is their Dropbox-like thing. And mm-hmm. they created software that will run on Windows, Mac, and iOS. They used to give away like an obscene amount of storage. I mean, it was like 10 gigs or 25 gigs. I mean, like
Whoa.
A ridiculous amount. Now they're like down to 7 gigs, which is still really good. And both of these guys did it on Monday. And it was almost like they knew that something was coming on Tuesday, which it did. But before we even get to that, another thing that I thought was interesting was there's a new program, or how do I want to say it? There's a new game called Cargo Bot, B-O-T, that is an iPad game. But here's what's cool about it. It was built on the iPad using a program called Codea.
Okay.
And it was compiled and submitted to iTunes like 100% on iPad.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems like something that would really upset Apple if they knew.
Codea got approved onto the App Store and, you know, whatever.
They have a Cocoa compiler on the iPad. That's crazy. I'm actually surprised that that got through. Just for Apple's own what they do, you know, and kind of how they control everything.
Yeah, they imported the runtime library, and
wow,
yeah. So it's I think that's how it worked. Yeah, because you can get it all on the App Store. So
yeah,
but yeah. So it's kind of that's that next step, right? Of being able to do productive things. Machines building machines type of thing. So I thought that was neat. And
that was very cool.
And we might talk more about that later. Cool. Da-da-da. Another one, and this one's special to my heart, on Tuesday is a company called Path2 is taking on an eHarmony approach to jobs. So having people fill out profiles and trying to find a job that they think would match well. I was a part of a group where we tried to do something similar in matching people, and that is not an easy thing to do, just for the record.
it's a complicated algorithm.
Yeah, you know, people are funny and weird. When we talk about stats and you're modeling people behavior, if you get like an R squared of above 50%, you're doing like fantastic.
What's an R squared?
In stats, that is the measurement of how predictive your model is. Getting 100% is, you know, perfect. You're right every single time. And
so,
by the way, if
F
you ever
equals,
get that, you probably did something wrong.
I can say so a perfect R square would be like a physics model, you know, right?
Yeah, probably. Okay. Yeah, and so it's whenever you're doing some sort of predictive thingy, it's, you know, how much of the time are you right, basically?
Nice.
You know, so the higher the better. When you're modeling customer behavior, if you do like 50%, you might as well just publish a paper and get the recognition for it, because that's amazing. I would say the average is closer to like 30% in how well we can model actual human behavior, like decision-making, nice, things like that. You know, like what would make a good job.
Right.
So it's incredibly, incredibly difficult to do. And there's a balance between trying to measure everything and not overwhelming people. And so, you know, good luck to them. I tried it. It didn't work. But I'm not the smartest guy in the world. So, you know, it could work out. I think the potential is there to search for jobs smarter. No one's just really cracked that nut yet. It's hard to beat human intuition. So the other thing that happened on Tuesday, the big news was Google Drive was announced.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that later, because that was kind of what I would call the big news of the first part of the week, at least.
Okay.
And so it's the Dropbox killer, the SkyDrive killer, the thing that Google's been working on for like 5 years, and it's finally here. So we'll talk about what that is and, you know, why it's awesome or not awesome later. And then I thought this one was just kind of fun. Apparently, James Bond movies are not quite as off as we thought they are. There's a new startup that's backed by Larry Page, Eric Schmidt, and another guy named Peter, it's Diamandis. They are creating a company.
What about James Cameron?
You would think that he would be in this. Because,
no, he is in this.
Oh, is he? It's not.
Yeah.
He's not mentioned at the beginning,
okay.
So.
Okay.
Whatever. But they have created a company that is going to mine asteroids for valuable materials.
Yeah.
Let's just pause real quick. Mine asteroids.
Well, this let me help out here, because Wednesday, an interesting op-ed came out, and we are going to talk about this one deeper, and it relates. But basically, you know, people have been, you know, as Americans, we want to know, when are we going to get American jobs back? There was a really long article that really covered well one of the big reasons why America is doing the vast majority of their electronics production in China, and it has almost everything to do with rare earth elements, elements that are literally rare on Earth. Guess where they're not rare?
Asteroids? Cool.
So there was one article talking about preparedness for malware, basically kind of as a response to the successful Trojan last year. Kaspersky, he's a dude who runs a malware antivirus company, claims that Apple's 10 years behind Microsoft on security. So all you Apple haters out there, you'll probably agree with this. He brings up some interesting points just about what happened to Windows XP about 10 years ago, with the whole Service Pack 2 and a couple of big Trojans, and how it actually, and he talks a little bit about how it actually set back Microsoft in their as they were coming out with new OSs, specifically putting Vista so far behind. It had a lot to do with that, and so he fears that Apple is at a point where they're going to have to get really serious about security in a way that they haven't had to before for a number of reasons. And, you know, even though, as we kind of always come back to, even though it wasn't a worm where it wasn't self-propagating, it's still not something that you can just let run rampant. Of course, Sky sells antivirus software, so you know, scaring people is his business. So that's the counter argument, which isn't a fantastic counter argument, but you know, it's, you know, be wary is all. So, you know, it'll be, I guess it's something to pay attention to over the next couple of years as Apple, especially with WWDC coming up, where they'll make announcements for OS X Lion.
Are you going to that, by the way?
I am not going to that.
I couldn't get your tickets, huh?
Because I live in California. It turns out Apple tried to, this week, they announced WWDC and when they were going to sell the tickets. Last year, it sold out in a day. And so what their thought was people were buying tickets and reselling them. So they made new rules. Basically, if you weren't the one who actually bought the tickets and you don't show up, you can't use the ticket. So they like really cracked down hard on scalping and stuff, and thinking that that would actually give people more time to buy tickets for WWDC, and they were completely sold out before 8 a.m. on the West Coast.
Fantastic.
So yeah, so basically nobody in California is going to WWDC, including those people living in Cupertino. Nice job.
Yeah, by the time I read about it was too late.
Yep, it's tough, you know, because they actually went out of their way to try to do it. I would not be surprised at all if they actually reopened tickets or tried to do something, because that just, you know, you can't really call it the worldwide developer conference when you only have people from, you know, New York and, you know, coming.
Wow.
But, you know, yeah, I guess there are people in the middle too. But, you know,
maybe it's just more worldwide than it ever has been before.
Maybe.
Or it makes you wonder maybe what those East Coasters are up to.
I know, seriously. We are in the wrong valley. Anyway, so another thing that's kind of going on, people are getting a little bit retrospective. We like nice round numbers. We like things that are divisible by 10, things that are divisible by 5. It's been 5 years since the iPhone revolution, the smartphone revolution, rather, began. And so people are starting to look back and try to figure out where we came from and where we're going. We will definitely be talking about that later in the show.
So I watched this this cool video. It's the guy's name is Sebastian Thurun, and he was on Charlie Rose, and we'll have a link to the actual video. It's a 20-minute video, totally worth watching. He works in Google X. And so he actually shows up to the Charlie Rose interview wearing the Google glasses and takes a picture of him and then just continues to wear them the rest of the interview. And they talk about self-driving cars and education, higher education. It was a pretty cool outlook. One of the really interesting things he said that was a surprise to me, because he was like, so you work for Google X? And he goes, yeah, I do. He goes, but honestly, it's something that was way overhyped than what it really is. He's like, it's a research arm just like anybody else, but with the goal of looking at big dreams and going, what if? What would it take to make it happen? And then trying to make it happen. It was like with the glasses. They went, how cool would it be if we could have glasses instead of people looking down at their phones, they're looking up at the world. And so Google basically went to this guy who's like, you know, foremost whatever dude in the world and said, we would like to try to make a prototype and actually do this. Would you come work for us if we gave you all the time you wanted and all the money you needed? And like any sane person, he said, yes. So, you know, so they were like, we're not necessarily looking to turn this into a $1 billion product or, you know, change the world with it. We're experimenting. We're having fun. And these things could take 20 years. And that's totally okay with us. So it was an interesting interview. It was very cool. This guy is, you know, like most people at Google, brilliant, and a fun interview.
Nice. We'll actually swing back around to those glasses. For now, Thursday, Steve Wozniak was interviewed. He said he really wanted the Lumina 9000, the Windows phone.
Does look cool.
He was pretty excited about it. Yeah, and he heaped the praise on. He made comments to the effect of, man, this thing from a UI perspective, it really feels like I think his exact quote was, it's almost as though Steve Jobs was reincarnated at Microsoft. I don't know what happened.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, pretty huge praise. And basically saying it's the most elegant phone. You know, it's way better than Android. He fell short of actually saying it's better than the iPhone, but I think that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know,
yeah,
he's Steve Wozniak, and he can't say that sort of a thing. His only criticism.
Do you think he would have if he wasn't?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I definitely think. I think wow. He was really enthusiastic. I mean, that's, you know, that's a heck of a praise, especially since that's the UI that they're going with for Windows 8. So it'll be really fascinating to see, you know, if that really sticks with it. His only criticism was that it doesn't have any development. But as we talked about last week, you know, with .NET and you know, the strategies that they're going at, yeah, it'll start moving forward. But as far as Wozniak was concerned, he seemed pretty confident that Android's going to get crushed by the Windows Phone. So, you know, obviously Android's a very, very adaptive company. I don't think that will be a long-term problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna change the game, according to Wozniak.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, so speaking of apps, Slow Pro is an app you can get from the App Store. If you have an iPhone, I recommend it. It looks really, really cool. Basically, what it's doing is it's bringing slow motion camera to your iPhone. A lot of people believe this is actually not technically possible, but they went through and had some cool rendering stuff that they did dealing with slide transitions, and they basically, you can take live video and then edit it and basically make chunks of it run in slow motion. So like the video that they have, and they have a video that we'll link to, but you know, they've got the snowboarders coming down the hill and he hits the jump, and then they pick, I want to go from here to here. They actually have a comparison of what it is if you just make it choppy and make the frames last longer. It looks awful, but their smoothing technique made it look really good, actually, and pretty neat. If you're into that kind of amateur filming and you want to do that sort of a thing, I guess it. And they said it renders live, so it's really snappy.
Cool.
People are pretty excited about it. So
wow. I
thought that was cool. Apple devastated all predictions earlier in the week, just making tons and tons of, selling tons of phones. So we finally get the real comparison between Android and Apple for number of phones sold this last quarter, and it looks like Apple made got 59% of the market share, which was pretty devastating. It's the second quarter in a row.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's the second quarter in a row that Apple is outselling Android, and they continue to do better, and Android's doing worse. You know, 6 months is really, you know, too short to say this is a definitive, like, this is a long-term trend. But something's happening, and, you know, it's...
Windows Phone.
It wasn't... Right. Maybe that has a lot to do with it, but we'll talk about that. So just interesting that's definitely occurring. Hmm. Also, I saw an article talking about how the iPad's acting as an anchor for Apple and getting people to try it out. But the really stunning statistic I saw was
Okay, go ahead.
98% of first-time iPad owners are satisfied with their iPad.
Okay, so just to clarify, the earlier statement you said was the iPad is the first Apple product they're buying.
Right, correct.
Which is pretty crazy when you think about how many iPods there were already.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of people who are still going out, but
and they like it, huh?
Yeah, a lot. Which is just, it's nuts. I mean, what product has a 98%? Yeah, we like this device, you know, rating. Yeah, which means that they're getting almost no returns. So the sell-through on that is insane. Makes sense why you can't buy used iPads.
It must just be the type of... I wonder if it has to do with the type of people buying it or... That's interesting. I'd like to know more that goes into that.
Right, because that's a Freakonomics type thing where it's not just the most loved. Yeah, because that was my first thought too, of the kind of person that's willing to go buy a tablet device is a certain type of person, because a lot of us aren't willing to do it, and so I think there's a lot of self fulfilling prophecy involved. I would be my guess of.
Well, I also feel like if you're gonna buy a tablet, you're buying it for a specific purpose, and admittedly, the apps look awesome. And so, you know, when you're buying it for that purpose and the app looks awesome, it's going to, you know, be a good experience. Whereas I feel like with PCs, a lot of people buy them because you got to have one. And
right.
I don't know. They've only been around for a couple years, too. And so they're still
novel. They're still new. You still get to look all cool when you have one. And
there aren't a whole lot of real competitors out there to point out the flaws of it.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So... I guess I'm not super surprised, but, you know, hey, good for them, right?
Yeah. Definitely. So a lot of talk about who's going to buy Twitter, which I'm not exactly sure why that's happening.
Nobody.
I don't think anybody's going to – I don't think anybody can afford Twitter.
Twitter's like a thing they want to sell. They want to be whatever, right. Something.
Well, they were talking, you know, Instagram got bought, and that kind of gets everybody's – all jittery and I guess Twitter
over it.
Exactly. I guess the thing is that Twitter is not like Facebook, where Twitter hasn't reached whatever that level is that Facebook has reached, where
profitability.
People go, oh, okay, yeah, yes, that's probably it. Where people finally go, yeah, okay, you guys are on your own. No one's gonna buy you. And I think to a large degree, people are still.
I think Twitter should turn itself more like a Wikipedia or Wikimedia, I guess, style, where it's a nonprofit, where like we're here for the social good, because they try to take that high road a lot, and they go, we're important to the fabric of news and blah blah blah, whatever makes you feel good about yourself, but don't try to play the for profit side of it. Just go, we're gonna be a nonprofit, we're user supported, and. Do something like that. That's almost how I feel they would be best served to go, because I feel like this content or not content, this revenue issue is going to be a big one for the rest of their existence.
Yeah, and it's not like you couldn't live a lavish lifestyle as the CEO of Twitter, it would mean you wouldn't become a billionaire. You'd only become a millionaire. You know.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe they'll figure out the revenue thing, and you know, I'll have to eat my words. That's possible. I'm just saying. I guess I could easily see them go the nonprofit route and be supported by everyone else on the web, and that could work out, Firefox style.
Yeah, makes sense. We'll see, but you know. Man, people are wondering. Yeah. So Samsung, big news. Samsung, one of the number one suppliers for Apple, passed Nokia as the worldwide mobile phone sales.
Dang.
That doesn't include smartphones, so obviously Apple's still crushing when you're just looking at smartphones. But Nokia is no longer the number one seller.
Smartphones too, right? These are all phones.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So. Yeah, if you just look at smartphones, Apple is the number one. But if you look at and they've actually been number one for a while when you look at different companies, not just
Android.
Not operating systems. But as far as a company goes, Samsung finally passed Nokia. And you know, it's funny, they've had the whole Galaxy thing has really, really worked out for them. It's been a great
They're cool
move,
phones.
Yeah, they can't get over the feeling that I actually think that part of the reason why they're doing as well as they're doing is because of their relationship with Apple. They have more disposable income because they're profiting like crazy from Apple than anybody else. I think I got to believe it helps. They're in a great position is what it comes down to.
They shipped 92 million cell phones?
Yeah.
That's a lot of cell phones.
Yeah, there's tons of people buying cell phones.
So and I'm thinking about that in terms of how many – LaserJet toner cartridges we sell, which I think that's a huge number. And this is around that same number. Just think, they're selling as many phones. I don't know if I can say that. Shoot, I probably shouldn't. ignore that line, I guess.
Yeah, we'll edit that out in post. So, moving on. So it turns out Steve Jobs really wanted to be Willy Wonka, to the extent of he was actually going to have like a golden ticket.
Dude, what a weirdo.
I know, really, really. Yeah,
I guess we all have childhood fantasies.
I know, but he was like, they're going to put a golden ticket in one of the, like, the millionth iMac.
Okay, that's legitimately cool. But
yeah, so if you buy the millionth iMac, you'd get this golden ticket. And he was like, yeah, you get like a tour of all of the secret stuff that all the secret laboratories you get in. You get to hang out with Steve Jobs. But Steve Jobs wanted to show up in the hat and the coattails, whole nine yards, go full Willy Wonka.
What a showman.
I know. Well, it's so funny. Everybody, I guess they were saying, like, everybody in the room was like, yeah, this is cool because Steve wants to do that, but that's stupid. We can't do that. So it turns out they looked in, and California law says that you can't have a contest where a purchase is necessary. You have to be able you have to be able to win without making a purchase. I don't actually know why that law exists. I've just known it for a long time because people play Monopoly. McDonald's Monopoly all the time. You can write in and they'll give you game pieces. But they basically, so when Steve Jobs realized that, what you mean they don't even have to buy a Mac and they could get these? He's like, that's stupid. That's not going to happen. So
I wonder if you could set that up in such a way where, you know. Yeah, technically it's there. I mean, they do it with the App Store somehow now, right? Where whoever downloads the
But those apps are free. They're free at downloads.
I guess it doesn't. All right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But that idea got
Fill
killed.
Fill out this 30-page form and we'll give it to you.
But didn't Anyways. Happen for him. He wanted it.
So some other news that happened later this week. There is finally data that Netflix is killing Nickelodeon and kid shows in general. The basic thing that they found was they were comparing Netflix streaming behavior. And what they found was that for adults, people who stream, how do I want to say it? Just because you have Netflix as an adult doesn't mean you watch any less TV. What they found is that the amount of TV watching is the same between streamers and non-streamers. Okay,
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. It was just like, we just literally watch more TV, which I was like, wow. that's amazing. I didn't even know that was possible. Yeah. However, the big difference is with kids. They are actually only doing streaming because they can watch their favorite show and just keep going. And So they don't need child television like Nickelodeon, where, you know, you do one show now, one show then, blah, 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 blah. And so I've got to imagine, too, that parents like it more just because there's no commercials and kids can kind of sit there with the remote and self-serve and, you know, do their own thing. And
yeah, and they can rewatch the same episode again,
yeah,
and again,
yeah,
and again,
and
again.
So, but that's interesting. Which, so I've just started watching The Legend of Korra online, actually, which is on Nickelodeon's website. And so, hopefully, they got all the funding squared away for that. But
well, it's interesting because back when so this is just a short aside, you know, kind of in Spanish because it has to do with changing technology. But that you're talking about the new Airbender, the Last Airbender series. And when the Avatar The Last Airbender was going, they were actually suffering ratings really, really bad, and they started to put a disclaimer before the show, you know, please actually watch the show because you're killing us. And basically, like, a plea to don't pirate this show, which I felt really bad since I pirated the entire show. And you get these, like, warnings. You're like, oh, man, it's terrible.
Can we feel bad.
This? I know, I did. I think I've since made reparations for that, I have paid for large chunks of the show. But, what was I going to say? The thing is that I think they knew that. And I think that's why they put such an emphasis on making the new seasons available, not just online, but actually before the show airs live. Because they're just like, they've realized that there's such huge constituents. Like, they can get tons of advertising dollars if they actually just make it available to adults when it's, you know, when it's available. And so they're really finding that there's a big move to do that. And so I have a feeling that hopefully that show, they've really thought through it and they're taking a new strategy, and this is kind of their big venture. But you know, who knows? Hopefully it doesn't get killed halfway through because nobody watches it on TV. Like, is there fear? anyway, so I got a cool article. We're going to talk about this one more. I kind of mentioned it briefly. Basically, a recap of where we are as far as glass is concerned. Glass is a pivotal part of all modern technology, whether your phones or your computers or your windows or your glasses. And we've had some really exciting improvements. This article kind of does a good job of capturing each one and talking about what the future holds for each one. And we'll definitely be giving you our opinion on that.
Does it talk about the MIT glare-free self-cleaning water repellent glass?
It does.
Cool.
Yeah, we do. It does. So you're going to, okay. MIT has, do you want to cover that?
Apparently we will later. Right now. So it's good.
Okay. Cool. Also, I don't know if you may not have heard on the news, because I think the media is realizing that people are getting hip to the fact that Apple doesn't own Foxconn, but there's a big protest in Foxconn. People were threatening to jump off of one of the factories over working conditions and pay and stuff. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Reuters was...
Was that like Reuters, a... Right? So it is a big deal? Reuters. We're like, big deal. Which kind of big deal was that?
No, it is a big. It was okay. A big deal.
All right,
people were threatening to kill themselves over it. Yeah, it was. I wasn't trying to belittle your situation. okay. Yeah, so it was
just
a big
just
deal.
Just checking. You just said it pretty fast. Yeah, big deal. All right.
I didn't mean. I was. no. Thank you for clarifying for me.
No problem.
But the thing was, and this was what was interesting, was it was being reported as Foxconn, the manufacturer for Apple, and even though they didn't talk about what was being built at the factory where people were protesting, the implication was that Apple was somehow involved. It turns out at this factory where people were threatening to kill themselves over the working conditions, there's not a single Apple product made. It's all Xbox 360. Hmm. So it actually was a huge protest about treatment by Microsoft. And
well, it's still a discussion about Foxconn, but...
Yeah. Right, but right, okay, good point. You know what, fair enough. But Apple's been really trying hard to be good, and they're doing all right. Was the point. So
got it. And finally, there's an article saying that Microsoft's Metro UI could slowly kill Android. And it wasn't because of the reasons that Woz stated, because, you know, it's beautiful and amazing and whatever. Their whole thing was exactly what I had said a little while back, which was they are creating a consistent UI environment across all their devices, across phones, tablets, and computers. And what's going to happen is people are going to buy a new computer, because they do, and it's going to have Microsoft's Metro UI on it. And then they're going to go to a Verizon store, and they're going to see the Windows phone and go, oh, I know this. I use that on my PC at home. And they're going to feel comfortable, and they're going to go with what they feel comfortable with. And they're going to do the same thing with tablets, and slowly start eating away market share in those other places because of their dominance in the PC world, which is exactly what I said. So it feels good to be validated.
Word. Yeah, I agree. I think you heard it here first, so keep listening.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, seriously, this is a good one. I am excited. Okay, so that covers this week in tech.
I don't think we can say that, but sure.
Yeah, we're gonna say. I'm pretty sure that's copyrighted by somebody else. But
by Mr. Leo Laporte, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, what's up? You know what? Honestly, if he sued us, that'd
this
be
is
such
your
good news
this
for
is
me.
Your technical weekly review.
Yes.
TWR.
Cool. Yeah. So what was I going to say?
I don't know.
Yeah. So there's no real we didn't think about a transition for this at all.
There it is. Awkward. So the first thing that I wanted to dive into, and honestly, now that we're here, I don't think it sounds as cool. But I just wanted to reiterate how awesome it is that I think CargoBot is made on the iPad using Codea, and so it's not necessarily the game. I haven't played it. I don't know, because I don't own an iPad. But
I've actually played CargoBot.
Is it fun?
All
right. But what's cool about it? So Codea is the thing that's actually exciting,
right?
Because it's a it's a project based thing where you start off where you can. It gives you like a prototype area where you can do the quick design of it, you know, get a, you know, real quick version of it, make a prototype of it. And then it helps you code it up in the sense that like you give it simple directions. So I guess the thing that, you know, it's not like a full on development library or SDK. You know, it's very limited in what it can do. And, but it's started down that direction of, you know, being able to be a self-sufficient, you only need this machine. Because the whole thing when the iPad and iPhone came out was like, well, you can't code on it. You have to have a Mac.
Right.
And so it was like, well, of course computers are always going to be around.
Yeah.
Because we need them. And this makes that's just one small step towards that necessarily being the case.
Well, it's funny. I remember distinctly. You know, when the iPhone and iPad iPhone and iPod Touch were out, and I remember trying to figure out different things. Like, I went into the App Store or the Apple Store one day, and I was like, had my iPod Touch, and I was like, I really want to be able to grab the URL for images. I don't want to have to download them and reload them up onto my server. I want to just be able to grab someone's URL for an image, put it onto, you know, put it into my website or save that URL. How do I do that? And the assistant looked at me and said, you can't do that. I was like, what do you mean you can't do that? He goes, well, why would you want to do that instead of just saving the image? And I was like, well, there's a whole slew of reasons, but it's usually for website development. And he looked at me and said, that's not what the iPad or the iPhone is meant for. I was like shocked. I was like, what do you mean? It's not what it's meant for. but to me, it really clearly indicated the fact that, you know, really and truly, these devices, iOS devices, were were built not just with, you know, a certain thing in mind, but with certain things in mind that it wasn't designed, it wasn't going to be able to do. And the cool part about technology and creativity is that usually as soon as you give it a box, if it can go beyond that box, it will. And I think with Codea, you're really seeing the seams start to bust on that very thing, you know, and you're starting to see people work around limitations that Apple intentionally put on the device, and legally in a way that, you know, because I, you know, I'm not a knee jerk. I hate the App Store. I actually think the idea of the walled garden, we protect our users, we protect our system from malicious malware, we make sure there's a unified, everything works. It's actually a, you know, obviously, I think right now we're seeing the side effect or the end effect of that mentality in their sales of the iPhone. And so I think it's great, but it's definitely exciting because I think a lot of people have felt that the potential's there, you know, whether it be in web development or just application development or whatever. I want to be able to do it on my computer. And, you know, that was the beauty of the modern PC, this idea of you could write out a chunk of code. You could write out BASIC on a computer. You could save it to the. You can compile it. You could save it to your hard drive, or write out assembly rather. And you could save that to your hard drive, and then the computer could directly run that code. And so you could code on the machine that was executing the code. That was such a big deal, and it's such a weird step to take to say, yeah, even though this computer is capable of doing that, your iPad, we're not going to let you.
Right.
And so I'm glad to see that within a very large realm of reason, you're getting these environments that can do that. Now, I think one of the interesting parts about this is that one of the big reasons why they don't want you to do this is because if you can download source code and compile it and that source code is malicious, then if it's running on your iPad, it's malicious code. And so I think that's one of those I think that's one of the things that they're really trying to figure out, how to allow people to do exactly what they want to do, which is code on their iPad, without opening it up to all sorts of malicious attacks. Especially because what you don't want it to be is you don't want it to become like this virtual machine on your iPad that can run anything. So there's just a lot of things that they have to consider when doing this, and making sure that since such a big part of this is just making sure that it's a safe, secure platform. You know, it's not just protecting financial positions, which there's part of that too. But I'm really glad to see that Apple is working with developers to develop the apps that will allow them to develop on the iPad, and then not just saying, yeah, sure, we'll give you an app that you can do it on, but we're not going to accept those programs. But, you know, it's a successful app. You know, it's in the App Store. I don't know. I think it's a really good movement forward, and I think it's a model that Microsoft will probably, you know, Microsoft is already very open about.
I was going to say, I don't have an Android device, but I'd be shocked if there isn't already something in the Android store or Play store, whatever it's called.
Well, that already does Android. So yeah.
But
well, Android's so weird because it is a virtual machine. Like, you can write a completely new operating system and have it go in and, you know, boot the Android operating system. I mean, you can get nuts with Android, but with Microsoft, they're clamping down like crazy. Hmm. You know, whereas Apple's like within the application, we don't have any, like, there's no UI stuff that you have to do. Whereas Microsoft will reject applications if they don't like your UI, if it doesn't match theirs. I mean, Microsoft is even harsher than Apple because they realize that it's a good strategy. It's working. So I think that there's a mentality, there's a concern as a developer, like, wait, you mean I'm not going to be able to use these devices? So I'm glad that they're slowly and cautiously working through the actual nuts and bolts of this. You know, maybe it's not happening as fast as we'd like it to, but the fact of the matter is it's happening, and I think it's a model that you'll definitely see Microsoft adopt over the next, you know, couple of years.
Yeah. But it's cool.
Pretty cool.
Watching computers.
Definitely.
slowly fading to the background.
Right. That's the exciting part right there.
Of course, there was some article somewhere that was talking about how most people are using iPads as their third device, with their phones being their number two. And that's one of the reasons why sales are taking off like crazy. It's because they're not replacing, they're just adding on. And
yeah.
Which leads, you know, gives credence to my statement about it not being a PC.
Yeah, I still think you're wrong, but whatever.
It's fine.
No, I think you're wrong. I mean, I think you're right. You're saying you're wrong. Anyways,
Let's talk a little bit more about Google Drive. And,
okay, I want to hear about this.
Yeah, so do you know what it is?
I signed up for it, but I don't actually know what it is.
Okay, I'll be honest, I didn't download it either. I'm bad.
They won't let me download it.
Oh, you gotta like...
I'm not part of their... You got that, like, I don't know what you did to make Google love you, where they give you all the free stuff early, but they make me wait for friggin' everything. I don't know why. It drives me crazy.
Well, how do you... Okay, let's see here. Available today. Drive, start, authorize user, home. Oh, it's not ready yet. I can't do it.
Oh, you can't do it either? Okay, good. No. Whew, that makes me feel better, because I was like...
I feel good, too, about not signing up. Notify me. Yeah. Well, now I want to know that you kept me out. Jeez.
I know.
Now I want in. Learn more. Okay, so I can tell you what I've learned.
Okay, tell me.
So Google Drive was this thing that, from what I can tell, it's compared to a Dropbox competitor, but it isn't really. So this is something that Google's been working on for seriously for like 5 years. It's unbelievable.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Well, off and on, I guess. But what you do is you get 5 gigabytes of free storage, and if you feel like paying, you can. I believe.
So this is awesome. Between iCloud, Dropbox, SkyDrive, and Google Drive, you can get 20 gigabytes of free online storage. You just have to juggle it all. Nice.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's intense. But their pricing strategy is pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get more, you can. For like $10 a year, you can get 20 gigs of storage. You know, and on and up from there. And, you know, which is $10 a year. That's pretty reasonable for 20 gigs. And what's also cool about it is things like docs that are like that you've made with Google Docs doesn't count against your storage. And so it's only like Microsoft Word documents or, you know, Keynote, whatever, you know, those other ones. And there's 30 different file types that you can actually open up natively in the browser. You know, it's like
nice.
Photoshop, Illustrator, whoa, HD video. You probably can't edit them, but you can at least open it up and share it with people, which was cool. And so their thing is, like, so when you install it, it installs like another folder on your computer, like Dropbox does.
Right.
And I'm guessing SkyDrive too. And as you can tell, I use Dropbox. I don't use the other ones. It totally meets my need. And, so once you have it, it literally will create, you know, it's a folder, and all of your like Google Docs will show up in that folder. And if you double click them, it will open up Google Docs in your web browser. And, you know, and you can go off and edit them. So they're like shortcuts, basically. But then you can also put in other regular documents. You know, if you write a Word doc, you could throw it in that folder, and then it'll upload it to Google Drive. And then you can open it and look at it and share it and do whatever you're going to do with it. Probably convert it into a Google Doc if you wanted to in that particular case.
Nice.
But yeah, so it's... it's pretty cool. I don't know why it's taken them so long to do it. There's probably been, my guess is that it's Google is heavily invested in the cloud and wants everything to be browser based, and you know, and in some ways this is going in the opposite direction. Oh, it's okay if you use native apps, and
right,
you know, which was probably what it was. And I think they finally said, you know what, if we want to get everyone onto the cloud, we got to get them used to syncing it and looking at our system, and so instead of saying, I think what they're saying it is, it's okay if you still use native apps for now. And for now. When you're ready to make that jump, we're here for you. Everything's already right here. It's already done. You know, don't and worry about it.
You know, it's funny. You know, we had that app or that video that we showed probably a month or two back now, but Microsoft making fun of Google Docs and, you know, trying to convince people to join in, but, you know, kind of giving that offhand, but you can't really trust us. Yeah, and I completely agree. The very fact that they're getting willing to support so many other people, it's very reminiscent of Apple converting to the Intel-based chip. We're giving you the opportunity, you know, it's, you know, once you get into our little system, you'll realize how awesome our system is and you won't want to deviate from it. But so many people, like, their big hesitation is, but what if I need something that's, you know, universal to everything else? Well, here's your opportunity. You know, you can open your Microsoft documents. You can use all of these other things. And so I think what I think the mentality that they're going for is they're trying to basically give you something that will work really well, and it's another option to kind of get you, you know, it's lukewarm, get your feet wet, you know, kind of get accustomed to the temperature and, you know, all that sort of stuff, to slowly get you to the point where that's all you use.
So one other cool thing that they've done is they're allowing third-party users to, you know, to tap in to them. So, like, one of their examples is Pixlr. It's a photo editor. And so when you can upload something to Google Drive, and then when you go to, I'm guessing, Pixlr.com, you can say, find my file on Google Drive. And it'll open up, you know, it'll show you those files, and you can open it up, make your edits, and then save it back to Google Drive.
Dude, I love Pixlr. I use them all the time.
So there you go.
You can do that? Oh, that's awesome. I cannot wait. Oh, my gosh. These guys have got... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Google, you install.
You have a new job. Seriously. Well, can we get somebody from Google on the phone right now? Because I use Pixlr all the time. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Pixlr's a great service. It's an entirely, because that was going to be my question. You know, you said, well, you can open up your Photoshop documents, and I was going to be like, well, there are online photo editors that allow you to open and edit folders, you know, really, really powerful, dynamic, multi-layer things that you can, you know, you can literally open Photoshop files or Illustrator files, do all your edits, and resave them as Photoshop files and open up in Photoshop. So you can do it on the fly, on the web, any computer, any browser. And I was going to say, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Google allowed you to, you know, built an app like that. It just seemed like a big deal. But that totally makes sense. That basically what they're saying is, no, we're just going to let third-party people that are already competent at that leverage our locker. Man, that's exciting. Okay, now I want it. I'm actually excited about it now.
Cool. Glad I could help. The other thing that they're doing, which I think is kind of weird, is they're upping your Gmail storage space at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah, which is cool. But I it's weird. So you get like 10 gigabytes free storage with Gmail, and you only get 5 gigabytes with Google Drive. And it's kind of like, why not flip it and then have, like, anytime you do an attachment, actually attach it to Google Drive. And so all your attachments are there and searchable and, you know, awesome. And then your Gmail is, you know, just the text part of it with, you know, links that look like downloads.
Well, seriously, okay, we need to get somebody on Google on the phone, because this is getting brilliant here. Where's our phone number, James?
Well, and then you can take it to the next step where, you know, when you go to Drive and you see one of those attachments, you can then, if you wanted to, see the conversation stream that's related to it. And it becomes a, you know, email/IM... stream of information related to this attachment. And so
and
think about this too, like let's just say this could be hard, where you've got an email stream and you've got a document, and now when you're working on the document, you're quote sending it, but again it's just the link back and forth, and so as people improve it, it updates. And if you wanted to, you could look at an earlier revision or look at the latest version of what's going on. You don't have to find that email with the latest version on it anymore. I just think they're setting themselves up for a much smarter way to handle attachments, which are a beast and they're ridiculously hard to search and use. And, you know, it's just one of those things about email that it was a cool idea when it first got started, and I think it's gotten out of hand very quickly. But I like where they're headed with this, and it's got some cool potential, I think.
Yeah. Hey, just so you know, if you want to talk about SkyDrive really quick, because, you know, they obviously announced the big stuff.
Yeah.
You want to know what that's like? Want to know how I know what that's like?
So you got in?
I got in. I did something I have never done before. It felt really weird.
Did you lie about your age?
What?
Did you lie about your age?
I did not lie about my age, believe it or not.
See, what would you do that would be weird and strange? Did you put on a big orange, like, leotard jumpsuit type of thing?
That is not weird or strange for me.
Okay. Not
so,
it?
So, no, not it. You know, my school colors for 9 years were orange and black. It happens sometimes.
Okay. So, well, what did you do that actually was weird and strange? Because that one...
I bought Microsoft Office.
Whoa.
I know. It's coming from
the guy who pirated Avatar.
I know. I know. It's terrible. I wanted to... I'm using it for some serious business. I will be self-publishing later this year, so I need all the templates to use Microsoft Office, so I decided to invest in a genuine copy of it so that I could use it and not be worried about it.
Plus, it's the right thing to do. Let's not.
Plus, it's the right thing to do. Well, I mean, my other option was to use, a free software that's not
like Office.org.
Exactly.
You did the right thing.
I thought so. But the cool part about it was I get tons of gigabytes of free space in SkyDrive. So it's really it's nothing super special. It's just there's a couple of documents, you know, there's a couple folders. You got a document folder, picture folder, you can add new folders, but it's, you know, specifically designed. It has pictures, you can do pictures. But it's specifically designed for Word. Kind of cool thing is it's a bit like it's a bit like Google Docs, where you can create documents and stuff, and all three of your or four of your major documents, OneNote, which I don't even know what that is, to be
it's
honest.
It's a note taking app.
That's crazy, because I couldn't have told you that. but the web app looks just like Windows 10. I mean, it's crazy. Like it's very.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a very neat, like, it's got the ribbon and everything. The UI looks identical, so it's very familiar. You can
I heard they were able to do some stuff in Internet Explorer, too, that because they own everything, they were able to add some extra features or make it more native app-like.
Interesting. I might have to check that out. I might have gotten rid of Internet Explorer so that might... Oh, no, I still have it. Okay.
And it might be like IE9 or 10 was required...
I'm pretty sure I have the latest.
But anyways, you should check it out.
But cool, yeah, that's definitely. Cool. So you like it?
I mean, it works.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you getting away from Dropbox? Are you gonna go SkyDrive only?
No.
How many gigs of space do you have?
I believe it's 5.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's not a ton. Well, my thing, and especially because, you know, a lot of my documents are huge. Well, the most compelling reason why Google Docs would never work for me, and maybe this is different now, you know, terrible time in Google, you almost had me, actually, that's not true. There was a limitation on the largest document you could have, and my book is enormous as far as text. It's 183 pages, single space, 12-point font. I mean, it's big.
How many megabytes is that?
Let me look. It's a 1.5 megabytes, and I actually do believe that was
1.5. That's not that big.
You can, well, but you could only have like a 1 megabyte file for a text document.
Weird.
So it was. Yeah, I mean, well, because I guess the rationale was, and I understand this, you know, who writes 183-page documents except novelists? And they just sat there and we're not going to support that.
Fair
Maybe
enough.
That changes. That'd be interesting. So, but obviously Microsoft is a little more supportive of that. The other thing is that there's just no way for a browser to hold that much data. So it probably would, it might just crash the browser. I don't really know. There's a bunch of technical, it's actually a lot of data for a browser to handle and deal with. So they don't like to do it, and I have to deal with that. So, you know, I paid out the nose for the legitimate software.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But it looks like, you know, it looks
like
a good
app. How
much is
Office going for nowadays, anyways?
I bought a little card. It's like, it was tiny. All it had was a code that I put onto a website, and that gave me the product key. So all I bought was the product key.
Okay.
No disk, no nothing. Single license, single computer. Was $120 for Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote. I did get it on a little bit of a discount, which is why I
That's
bought it that
discount?
Way. Yeah, well, no. I actually bought it for $110. But I couldn't find it anywhere cheaper. I mean, people were like, well, you could go, like, you can get it for, like, $90 through your schools. And I was like, no, I can get Microsoft University for $90, which, yes, it has the full suite of apps, but you can't sell that stuff as they don't, you know, they like notifies you that this is designed for student use. This isn't designed for commercial use.
Hmm.
And since I'm specifically using mine for commercial,
okay,
I needed a commercial license.
Got it.
Licensed thing. So yeah, so it's stupid. It's super frustrating that, but you know, it was the right thing to do. I did it. And I actually, like we've talked on the show, I like Office. I think it's a great suite, so I'm glad to have it. I wasn't glad to pay for it.
I like 2010. I hated 2007.
Oh, but yeah, 2010 was awful. But yeah, I'm very pleased with it. And I got Excel. That's actually, I am more excited about the potential that I have with Excel than I am with just having Word. I know, it's terrible.
So did you get Access as well? Was that part of it?
No, I didn't get Access. Right. I could have paid an extra $100.
Nope.
No. Access is the database. I was thinking Outlook.
Oh, you don't want Outlook. You don't need Outlook.
Oh my gosh! So to get Access, you had to get the Pro Suite,
uh-huh.
Which comes with everything, like all their different Outlook and Publisher and everything. Pretty cool, huh? $350.
Oh my gosh!
I know. I was just like, I asked. I was like, how much does this one cost again? They were like, yeah, it's like double the price. Turns out, I'm good. I'm good. I am good with just what I need.
Turns out, I don't need database stuff.
Yeah, seriously,
wow.
That's brutal, but very expensive. But like I said, you know,
that helps me respect what HP has, because I can just download all that stuff off our internal sites, which is cool. That must not be cheap for HP to provide that. Well, maybe it is, because they go, we have 300,000 employees. We would like a discount.
Yeah, well,
oh, yeah,
not only that,
we make your machines.
Oh, you say, we sell more copies of it than anybody in the world, including you.
Just,
so, you know.
Not you. Maybe give us a discount.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe help brother out.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then I wanted to...
Good talk.
Good talk. Anyways, we nailed it 5 years ago. What did we nail? Now, none of you were listening 5 years ago, because 5 years ago, we weren't doing this show.
We've only been doing it for 30 weeks. That's it.
I know. 31 weeks.
Wow.
I
guess if you include this one.
Oh, good point. Okay. We've only been doing it for 30 weeks, but believe it or not, about five years ago was when James and I started talking and started.
That's when we learned how to talk. We were late bloomers.
For all those years.
Imagine my parents' bliss.
Yeah, exactly. basically, 2007, we had all these different operating systems, had all these different computers. The iPhone had just been announced. You know, WWDC 10 years ago was when they said, by the way, we have a phone. So we were right in the thick of the rumor mills, you know, what's going to look like. People were talking, well, like I said, James and I had just started strategizing and wondering together. I think we did a pretty accurate job back then figuring out where we were going to be today. So just a brief recap of market share. So Symbian, the operating system, had a 63% of the market.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy. BlackBerry had 9.6% of
that
the market.
That seems low, but maybe not. I don't know.
That does seem really low. Windows, Microsoft Windows Mobile, Windows Phone was 12.0. Well, you have to think, because how they talk about market share, or how they talk about smartphones, was the BlackBerry was the highest-end smartphone you could get. The smartphone market was anything that like had an internet connection, not necessarily able to do anything fancy. So,
Which is why Symbian is super high.
Right. Apple iOS by the end of 2007 said it had 2.7% of the market share. Linux had 9.6. I didn't even know they were in the game. Palm OS had 1.4. Android didn't exist, and other was 1.1. This is data from Gartner.
And these are on sales, I'm guessing.
They said market share. So.
Yeah, but
I guess based on sales? Doesn't say.
I don't know. All right,
it doesn't say. So 2011, you know, fast forward, Symbian went from 63 to 19.
Ouch.
BlackBerry actually went up, believe it or not, but that's because.
Well, in this paragraph above it, it says Symbian is disappearing and BlackBerry is hanging on for dear life. I don't understand.
It's got to be a typo. That's got to be a typo, right?
I don't know.
29%? Okay. Let's do some quick math.
Is 13 greater than 9? Yes.
So, yeah, it's because it definitely seems like they're saying it went up. I just glanced at it. I actually read the article, but I just glanced at the... You see, this is where show prep comes in. Mm. I just glanced at this thing and was like, oh, I'll have to bring that up during the show, and didn't actually closely look at it. So let me do a little bit of quick math, make sure that 12, right, plus 2 plus
what are we doing
0.6 plus I have a theory 1.4 plus 1.1. Yeah, you know what, that had to be 29.6%. That's a typo.
Okay.
Because 72% of the market is the total.
Got it. All right. So, well, it would seem weird that the 9 is before the 12.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Of course, I don't know. All right. Cool.
I believe that was actually 29%. They've have their market share.
Now that paragraph makes more sense. All right. Cool.
Yes.
We're good.
So Symbian was what's interesting about this is that, you know, back in the day, basically when Apple, you know, announced the iPhone, everyone was like, yeah, what is this? Like, you know, you can't, it's this stupid. No one's going to buy it.
There was that famous interview with, what's
Ballmer?
His face? Ballmer, right. Where he was like, Ballmer. A $500 phone? No one would ever buy it, which he was right. And
yes, no one did ever buy a $500 phone except for like 20 people.
Yeah, which is why they immediately slashed the price and gave discounts to those 20 people. So, you know,
yeah,
he's a smart guy.
What was interesting about that was I was reading this and I had forgotten that the premier Microsoft phone was the Blackjack, and I owned a Blackjack.
Really?
Man, that was an awful phone. It was one of Kendra's hand-me-downs that she that, you know, as I am, you know, a phone killer, like I kill phones once a month just for the fun of it. I don't actually do it for the fun of it. I don't know what's wrong with me.
It's pretty incredible.
Anyways, it was, she hit a Blackjack, she was upgrading to something else. And I got her old Blackjack. It was ugly. It was awful. It was the worst phone. And I remember thinking, like, there's no way that this is it. There's no way that this is like what's going on in the phone industry. But people were really pitching that as, nah, this is a good phone, and this is what's going on. So back in the day, James and I, You're just going to have to take her word for this. unless you actually had one of these conversations, I'm looking at you, Doug. You know, if you were here having this conversation, you know that it seemed obvious. Obviously, Google's going to get bigger. Android's going to, or Apple's going to explode. This is the future. BlackBerry has either got to catch up or get, you know, get their head on straight. And there was a lot of concern about that just because of the nature of BlackBerry's. You know, they're pretty lethargic. They're not a very, you know, responsive company. I don't think anybody was even paying attention to Symbian because it's just like, what, you know, that Nokia's, I don't know if we've mentioned this, that was Nokia's operating system. It was what propelled them to be the number one phone maker in the world, that they held that title until this last quarter. Mm-hmm. Palm OS, obviously there was some excitement about it, but it didn't quite do what it was supposed to. Like I said,
you know, I was going to buy a BlackBerry Curve.
I do remember that.
Because I wanted a machine that had a calendar. That was my whole thing, because I wanted a calendar, and because I was tired of having to carry on multiple devices for that, and I was looking into the Curve, and I was doing a lot of research, and I was getting ready to pull the trigger on it, and then that March, Apple unveiled their phone, and it was literally, if I remember, I mean, because I ended up buying it like that Thanksgiving weekend, and, yes, and I was still torn walking into the store on like what I was going to get, and I played around with the iPhone for maybe 5 minutes and went, this is what I'm getting.
Yeah. I remember that, you coming back, and we got me, that was when I got my my Razor, which I broke in, you know, about a month. but yeah, that was, so I've always lagged behind a couple of generations as far as phones go. With for good reason. but yeah, and so the question is, this is the interesting question here. You know, it's fun to reminisce about the days of yore of old. But what's coming? Would you want to make a bet on what the market will look like in 2017?
Oh man,
yeah, that's a long time. I mean, Microsoft will have been fully vetted if this whole Metro unified operating system thing's going to work for them. Mm-hmm. If Apple's already got that kind of locked down and there's no room, Android will be, you know, they've had 5 years, they've had a ton of success. Things are kind of rocky. Obviously, if you listen to the show, I think we're both agreed that BlackBerry will not exist in 5 years.
I'm still betting by the end of the year, but
well, I'm talking market share. I mean, Palm, you know, market share hung around for a while, you know, after Palm died or was sold. So I still think, although I agree with you about, you know, BlackBerry not making it through to January, I think the market share will hang around for a bit. Of course, they might get absorbed into somebody else's numbers.
So this article talks about consolidation, where Nokia and Microsoft will probably get, you know, much closer to
friendly,
you know, get each other because of what we're seeing happening with Symbian and other stuff. They might have to. Obviously, the Motorola and Google deal is still in progress, but you know, chances are
China's going to approve it.
Yeah. And then it says, like, the big question is, or he goes on to say, you know, Apple, it's going to keep doing its thing, which there's no reason for it to really stop. You know, obviously HP and WebOS is dead. You know, call it what you want. It's dead.
James, it's open sourced, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh.
There's still potential.
Yeah, for maybe Samsung.
Yeah.
You know, that's gone. And who knows, maybe HP's got something new up its sleeve. If they do, I'm not privy to it.
I can say I have a sneaky suspicion that Meg Whitman is
they're talking about it, of course.
They're talking about it, but it's sort of a, you know, you gotta, I think she understands that it's got to be pretty unbelievably amazing if you're gonna break in right now, and you're not gonna just go with one of the, you know, market leaders that will license it, whether it's, you know, you, or not leaders, rather, but you know, unless you're going to go with Microsoft or Android and leverage one of their operating systems, you got to be amazing if you're going to introduce a third operating system at this point.
Right. Which I don't think they will. I think Linux, apparently it's done with the mobile space, which is fine because they own the server space.
Yeah.
Pretty handily.
Well, not to mention that they don't. It's not like they make money.
Well, yeah, there's that too. See, I think that's what Twitter should be. They should be the Linux of the world. They just power communication. That's it. Ooh, I like the sound of that. So, what do I think, though? Let's see. What do they say? In unit volumes, it will be dominated by low-end phones sold in emerging markets. It already is, but all right. I don't know if that's going to be true. It might be low-end smartphones. That might be an oxymoron, but not in 5 years.
I think the whole idea of... I really think that in 5 years, the market for pay-by-the-month smartphones is really going to take off. Like, somebody's going to crack that nut in the next 5 years, and I don't think it's going to be Apple. I don't think it's going to be Android either, to be totally honest. I don't think they have the bandwidth to handle that.
And they don't have to.
Well, yeah, but if they figure out how to, if Google figures it out, I think that it's going to be somebody else that really fills that space, because you're just going to have so many phones that you have to produce and sell in order to supply the demand that you're going to have in China and India for monthly serviceable, for pay by the month, prepaid smartphones. It's going to be nuts. And really the trick there is obviously not paying by the month service, because it doesn't have to do with the with the phone manufacturers. What the trick is going to be is the phones that can be purchased without subsidies, because that's what's made the GoPhone possible. Is the GoPhone is you can just buy it, and it doesn't require, it's not a subsidized device, or at least it's not, the subsidy isn't tethered to a contract like it is with, modern smartphones. We're going to have to figure out how to make smartphones that are dynamic and powerful, but also don't cost crazy amounts. And that's why I don't think Apple's going to do that. But I could see Microsoft killing in that space, because they don't have to develop the phone. They just have to, the hardware, they just have to license it to somebody who does. And, I think people have figured out what they need to do. Now they're just figuring out how to do it profitably. And I think that's going to be huge for the next 5 years. And whoever, like I said, whoever cracks that nut and really goes for it is going to, I think they're going to be your main player. I have a feeling that Apple's still going to be number one by revenue, though. There's nothing that's slowing down that train. Especially in first world developed markets, they make crazy amounts of money. Even when they're being outsold, 2-to-1, they were outgrossing everybody else. And now that they're outselling Android, the amount of money that they're making compared to people that are selling Android phones is just stupid. So it's
Yeah, we'll see though. I mean, people are picky. They like to pick on the top dog, We'll see. I also think 5 years from now, we'll know whether or not Tim Cook has the same skills as Steve Jobs in terms of picking products. Because if Apple stands still for the next 5 years and just kind of, iterates only a little bit on their existing products, whatever.
Let's be fair here. I feel like they've got a full 2 years, right? Because Steve Jobs died right around the... I guess 5 years from now, but they'll get the full effect of the iPhone 5 and whatever was in development for the sixth generation iPhone, is probably still in their pipeline. So they've got like a full 2 years of good ideas.
I also feel like Steve Jobs had a vision and he saw it come to life. I don't know if he had anything beyond, what we currently see, honestly. I mean, because OS X is really the next operating system. It looks prettier, but fundamentally, it's this thing that he had envisioned for Apple way back when he got ousted and couldn't see come to fruition. He started working on it with Next, eventually brought it back to Apple, and iterated on it. It's the same operating system. Now it looks prettier. I'll imagine, but from a revolutionary standpoint,
Okay, wait a second, wait a second. In defense of the engineers at Apple, I personally think that the only thing that OS X Lion and Next have, or OS X Lion, OS X, what are we up to? Seven? What was the first one? What was the first one called? Puma?
I don't know.
Whatever. The only thing that those things have in common, really and truly, is the name and the color blue. Like, you know, from a fundamental principles of how the operating system works, they're completely different.
Well, which is cool. I'm talking about from a user perspective. I mean, I just...
Right, well, and I think, but it's, you know, but you make it sound like they stayed still for 10 years and made
iterations. No. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that Steve Jobs had a vision on how he thought computers should work, and it stayed pretty close to that vision. Now, it has definitely gotten crisper and better. You know, they have figured out ways to refine it and make it pretty awesome. But in terms of how it acts and works, I think it's look kind of the same. And you know, and then he had a vision for you know, for a phone, and or I guess it was a tablet, which then he then converted to a phone. And he also had this idea for a, you know, for a music player. But I feel like, you know, what did we see after 2007? You know, what did he come out with? And this kind of comes back to our conversation from last week about, you know, okay, the iPad is nothing but a bigger version of the iPhone, and we're watching OS X slowly convert to the iOS. You know, really, what have they come out with in the last 5 years where you go, oh my gosh, this changes everything? I don't think you can point to anything where that's the case. At least I don't think so. And
what
I think, like,
FaceTime.
Oh man, FaceTime.
You know, I'll be honest. The further we get from FaceTime, the more I feel like that was kind of a definitely.
So I still use it on a weekly
fell
basis.
For the hype.
Least,
but, no, I'm not saying that people don't use it, but it's just a competing piece of software that competes against.
Yeah, well, you know, it would have been nice if they opened it up and you could use it on 3G. That was 3G was the big one, and the second they didn't allow that, it had a very limited use case.
3G and if they had opened the door for cross compatibility, where they opened the file format so that you could actually have a FaceTime conversation with a Google Chat, that would have been huge. I really think that would have been a game changer. But because they didn't do that, it's died in obscurity. But whatever.
So you look at like Microsoft. Windows 7 it was the same as XP. You know, from that dream overall, you know, broad strokes concept. It's still a desktop. You still got icons. You're still clicking. You're still using a keyboard. You know, I totally understand. The underlying technology is amazing, and there's stuff going on underneath the scenes that I can't even fathom. You know, I get that. And, you know, and even Android, you know, once they came out with it, they've made improvements, but I don't know. It's all the same. There hasn't been anything where you're just like, oh, wow, that it can do that. At least, and maybe I'm just getting super cynical, but in 2007, when they showed off that iPhone the first time, you're like, holy cow, that's not a phone. That's a computer with a phone app. You know, it totally changed the way that you thought about life and the world. And instantly became...
I don't know if I'd go that far, well, but yeah, it was pretty revolutionary.
Yeah, right. And I haven't seen anything like that. I guess I've seen some cloud stuff. I mean, and maybe that's where a lot of the play is, and you know, HP talks about big data all the time. That's kind of where our focus point is, and I don't know. Maybe it's awesome. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
This is a good segue. This is a good segue, I think, because
I don't know where to go from here.
Right, because okay, so this is an interesting question because we've talked about this idea before, but the picture under glass and the idea that it totally ignores it ignores haptic feedback and also just the idea of the right tool for the right job. What it does is it makes a very, you know, it's a unique in that, you know, when you touch. Your keyboard can be any language automatically. It's very adaptive, and it's great for a number of things. Basically, what this guy covers, and He goes through a couple of the different glass technologies that are out there. And I want to bring it up because we'll start at number one. Okay. These are the five technologies that he covers.
By the way, first, before you get started, my thing just went to sleep, so I have to check yours.
All right, thank you. Google wants wearable glasses. Basically, yeah, so actually talking, you know, it's funny that you read the name Sebastian Thurn, and I was like, man, I recognize that name. Where's that from? Well, it's because I was reading this article this morning about Google. Sebastian Thurn appeared this week on Charlie Rose talking about the glasses and talking, kind of going back and forth, and how that's Google's approach to glass right now. It's kind of a cool concept. It's different than the picture under glass that you get with your iPads or your iPhones or Androids, that idea that there's a piece of glass separating you from your content. What this is it's really a picture over everything else. It's an interesting approach. You know, it's just your classic heads-up display. But from what that technology does versus what a phone does is uniquely different, and I'll come back to that. Next, Apple wants curved glass. So one of the weird things that they're doing, and they bring this up as a point, it doesn't necessarily have to do a lot with the phones so much as it has everything to do with like what they're doing with their buildings. Like, you know, their new UFO space station ship thing that they're building for their new headquarters, where they're taking over HP's old site. There won't be a single pane of flat glass. Everything's curved, so you get these nice gradual curves. You know, they're really pioneering curved glass. Has nothing to do with computers. Don't know why they're doing it, but what does have to do with
computers...
For
the same reason that he wanted to dress up in Willy Wonka garb.
Yeah, you know what? It's pretty accurate, I think. But one of the things that they're talking about is this idea of a curved glass wristwatch. So essentially, you know, you've had your iPod Nano watches, and I really want one still. I haven't gotten one yet, but where you basically have a wrist band that it attaches to. Well, they're talking about the idea that one of the limitations of it is it's kind of ugly because it's big, but if the glass curved along the wrist, you could have a much lower profile device.
That'd be cool.
And what they're talking about is, like, you know, it could have Bluetooth or maybe even a tiny Wi-Fi chip that allowed it to contact with other stuff and see, like, you could control everything in your world, whether it be your iPhone or iPad or your iTV or whatever. You could control that from your watch, which I think would be awesome. I would pay too much money for that. Microsoft wants smart glass. So obviously they've had a bunch of videos over the last couple of years where, like, you know, you live in these, like, weird sterilized world where everything is, you know, white and glass.
And nobody talks basically to each other.
Exactly. It's very strange.
They're genuinely cool videos.
Yeah. But once again, this is in that same vein of picture under glass technology.
Right.
We're basically, you're talking about, you know, gesture based, touching the glass, having it very, very intelligent, synced with computers that aren't right there, but are, like, you know, buried in the walls and stuff. You know, very cool, exciting, and it shows you where it's going. What's interesting about it is that's not actually, Microsoft doesn't build that stuff. They don't engineer it. They don't design it. That's just where they're pushing. That's what they see happening.
When
that's
I was talking to a guy who, he was saying, like, the ideal thing would be to see HP logos all over the place on those.
Right.
To say, hey, yep, you know, Microsoft's got this technology, this vision, and we're going to be the hardware partner to... HP will be the hardware partner to, you know, facilitate
nice.
That vision.
Right. So that would be a big deal. That's the right attitude because that's how it would happen.
Yeah. But we're getting into big data, so whatever.
Right. Gorilla Glass.
HP is getting into big data, so whatever.
Gorilla Glass, obviously, that's been kind of a hot topic. Corning developed it 40, 50 years ago in the 1960s.
Wow.
Basically, the super strong glass. Nobody knew what to use it for. and just kind of sat around forever. But it has the strength of plastic. But,
I'm impressed,
you know, they
stayed in business. So, I guess there's been uses like fish tanks.
Well, yeah, I was going to say. Well, what's interesting to me, and I think one of the things that it was really indicative of this technology is that if you look at technology over the last, 500 years, much of the engineering technological development, very little of like the really, really, really cool advancements happened because somebody said, I want to do this and I'm going to develop X, Y, and Z technologies so that I can accomplish that. Usually what it was somebody had developed something 20 years before, somebody had developed something 80 years before, someone had, you know, had a huge stockpile of this, and you just kind of, somebody finally put everything together, and they went, you know, hey, look at this awesome new technology I have. I can't actually think of any great examples off the top of my head, unfortunately. I'll bring them next week, because there's some really cool ones like that. But this is a classic one of those where they had this technology, nobody really knew what to do with it, and finally somebody figured out what to do with it, and now it's incorporated in over 600 million devices. I mean, it's gone nuts, obviously. And Gorilla Glass 2, it's 20%. It's just as strong, 20% thinner. They think it's going to be in all the new phones, and the new iPhone screen is going to have it. It's getting all sophisticated. But they're also working on glass that's flexible and thin, but yet as hard as resistant to scratches, rather, as the glass that they have now. So they're doing all sorts of awesome stuff with glass, but actual glass. And they're also talking about glass that kills bacteria and viruses, including scary antibiotic-resistant superbugs. So what they're saying is they could use this glass and just put it on everything in, like, a medical room that'd be pretty cool. And then MIT reinvents glass. So, like, you mentioned this briefly, but basically what it is they've developed a way to create glass that has all these crazy microstructures on the surface of it, and it basically makes it water resistant. It also makes it very clear, but most importantly, it has no glare or reflection, which is kind of freaky to think about.
Or smudges.
Right, doesn't smudge. So basically what they're saying is, like, you know, this will be great if you want to kill tons of birds that, you know, already can't see it the glass. But basically...
You know, at first I was like, is this a metaphor? But no, it was not.
No. You're nope, serious. Nope.
It will kill tons of birds. That's awesome. Just bugs in your windshield left and right.
They're talking about using it in like car windshields, but one of the cool things is it's like, yeah, like you said, they're essentially self cleaning. So, like, you know, really clean with your fingers. You know, you don't have to worry about, especially since, you know, with the whole picture under glass, the interface is touching the glass, so that takes care of all your smudge problems.
There was a video related to it, wasn't there? I didn't actually watch it. Now that you're mentioning it, let's see here.
Yeah,
I'm going to click the button that says "Watch Video." Let's see what this does.
I love the fact that this glass is described as waterproof. Isn't all glass, you know, waterproof? But it's just when it dries, it doesn't, or it wicks it off, so it doesn't cause any problems with, like, you know, it doesn't leave any mark behind.
All right, so the drop hits the glass, and it's like super slow-mo, and then just kind of literally like rolls off. It doesn't actually, you know, like how water can attach itself?
Yeah.
You know, it gets absorbed into an object. It just literally bounces off. It's super hydrophobic surface.
Hydrophobic?
Hydrophobic, yeah, and it draws the dust with them. Well, that's almost weird.
Nice. So
it's like it won't get rid of the dust on its own. You know, if it's just sitting in a room, it will get dusty. But as you use it and, you know, sweat all over it, it will.
Oh, gross.
what do you think smudges are? It will actually clean itself.
Nice.
That's kind of cool. That is cool.
I like to think of smudges as oil, okay? I'm not quite that gross.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, but very, very cool. Oh, nice. Okay.
They're also saying it'd be useful for solar panels.
Oh, that was the other big thing is, yeah, because that is the biggest issue with solar panels, or the biggest operational cost with solar panels is cleaning the solar panels, because they have to be cleaned almost constantly, otherwise dust and dirt and everything ruins your efficiencies. And so really, really high, if you've got a really big solar farm, it can cost tons and tons and tons of money to have people out there cleaning off your solar cells to keep them at peak efficiency. And so this would be huge if you could literally solar panel industry. If the glass was self-cleaning. So very exciting. Okay, and the reason I bring all this up is because, as you might have noticed, the only technology on this page, they've got all sorts of different applications. They've got all sorts of cool stuff they're doing. The only one that's actually any different than the other four, though, in principle, is Google's wearable glasses. They're the only ones that actually change how you interact with your technology.
That's true.
Everything else is iterative improvements. I mean, and they're great improvements, don't get me wrong. Glare-free, smudge-free glass is great. Incredibly strong glass is cool. Curved glass, great, because you can design, you can get really creative with the hardware. Smart glass, I think that's what everyone wants. Nice job, Microsoft, doing what everybody else wants. It's easy to sell it when you do it. but like I said, Google, and I made fun of how dorky their glasses look, because, I think they look pretty dorky. But
dude, there was an awesome oatmeal cartoon about them, and it was like this week, and it was like technology this month or something like that.
Yeah.
If you don't subscribe to the oatmeal in your RSS, you need to.
I do. They're awesome.
I'll give our listeners a warning that he is not always PC. Uses profanity and bad images, but they're hilarious and highly relevant to social, whatever culture.
Yeah.
So it's worth it.
As I've said before, this is an explicitly clean podcast, whereas the oatmeal is just explicit.
Yes.
But it's great. I've liked the oatmeal for.
But one of the things he was saying is that Google has invented this pair of glasses that is absolutely guaranteed to not get you a date. And, it's right up there with the pocket detector. You're gonna look like a total dweeb. But I guess I'm married, so I don't care. Though it was funny. So I was watching that Sebastian interview.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that my wife Jessie was in the room, and so I had it on big screen and was watching it. And she goes, "What is that guy wearing? So what is that thing on his face? His glasses are broken or something." I was like,
"His glasses are broken.
That's awesome. Fantastic.
That's hilarious."
Yeah. So I was like, "No, those are the new Google glasses. Well, look, he's taking a picture with them right now." She was just like, "What? That's weird." I was like, "Well, good to know."
Just because you're married doesn't mean you don't have to pass the "does this make me look awful" test.
Well, what that means is that I won't be able to buy both of us a pair, and we could be twinsies walking down the street. That would be mega geek. I just wait until I go to church, and then I'm like sitting in it wearing the glasses, like, yeah.
Yeah, everybody else has got their like Bible out, and you're just like, I got it in my
I'm
face.
I'm following along, really.
I've got it in 3D.
Yeah, it's coming at me Star Wars style, really.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, I really want that. That would be awesome. Okay, James, I think I know what our first Google Glass app is.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, but okay. So then the reason I bring all this up is I think that it's funny. Until I read that article or that blog, and it really changed my perspective, because before that I was the hugest proponent of no, like touchscreen, picture under glass, that's the way to go. And I think it is a huge improvement over your like standard keyboard, because what is a keyboard except a non-changing picture under glass?
But you got to admit, it's pretty efficient when it comes to typing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are things that it does.
I mean, because you can do, quote, touch typing on it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are things... Yeah, I guess what my point was going to be is there are things that the current touch interface does really, really well, but I think, you know, to me,
So maybe it's not the keyboard per se, but it's the mouse that it's replacing. And that's...
Yeah. That's huge. That's
so anyways,
big.
So, sorry to distract you.
But the only one of these ones that really is a big change in how we'll interact with stuff is wearable glasses. I think from a glass perspective, and I think as a peripheral in 5 years, you could really start to see, you know, especially if Google keeps pushing this, and you know, a couple other companies
who've been
really
working.
Yes, coming
around to my worldview.
I know it's slowly. Well, I just keep thinking, you know, what would actually, you know,
be awesome?
You know,
glasses.
Well, I keep thinking, like, you know, one of the big reasons I make the argument that I think the next change is actually a move away from consolidation. You know, we've had this big thing of we want to consolidate all of our devices in our pocket into one unified device. Yes. And I think now the next step, my argument was going to be, well, we're going to put computers in everything that can't fit into a phone. We're going to put computers in our refrigerators and our ovens and our sewing machines and our scissors and our hammers and our, you know, our cars.
Well,
we're going to put computers in everything.
Consolidate ecosystems.
Yes.
But devices are many. I could see that. I buy into that.
A proliferation of devices, but I think you don't necessarily, but it's like you still need to be able to interact with it. And so I think from an interaction perspective, you could have your phone next to your hammer and you could know, I don't know, maybe a nail gun's a better example. I don't know.
Hammer, all right.
But I think, there's no real, you know, exactly. Well, I guess that actually is a great example, because what information are you going to get from your hammer on your phone that's going to be useful? But if you've
How
got
hard
you're
hitting
glasses,
so you know when it's time to take a break.
Well, yeah, or where I'm you're, but like if you want to, but what I was thinking, my immediate reaction is if you've got a little device in your, you know, something measuring like your location or your, you know, or your acceleration in your hammer, and it's communicating to your safety goggles that you have on where you need to hit, how hard you need to hit, what you're hitting, and giving you data on that, and it's collecting that and processing it as your worker working, I think that would be hugely beneficial. And I could just imagine simple things where you can get data from whatever.
That'd be pretty cool, where it tells you where your previous hit was and how hard it was. That actually
would be neat. And your display is in your glasses, because I think that makes sense. That's where it's going to be most useful.
Totally
and
agree.
Then your actual processor is in your back pocket.
I think,
you know, maybe 5 years is too soon to be optimistic.
Well, and
that.
I think you could even get to a point like the Microsoft concept videos where, honestly, your thing is a Bluetooth or a Wi-Fi device that is communicating with some server across the world.
Right.
And that's doing all the heavy lifting for you and just communicating it back and forth with your glasses or whatever's in your pocket.
Yeah, and I definitely think that's I don't know I think that's huge. I think that's
all
where
right.
We're going.
That's legitimately cool.
I know
technology's still going on. I'll admit it.
Woohoo! We got time. So you heard it here first. 5 years. You got
Yeah. So what are we? Let's be concise about this so that we can actually point back to it and not be all nebulous. Oh yeah, we said computers or technology would be cool in 5 years.
Yeah, but it's hard to be wrong when you're nebulous.
I know, but I don't want to be. I don't want to do that, you know? I know. Because, besides, if we're wrong, who cares? No one will remember. But if we're right, we will remember.
That's true.
So you're thinking wearable glasses, that's going to be a big deal 5 years from now?
Yep,
or,
I do think so.
Or maybe that will be, like, peripherals to devices, maybe, and glasses will be one of those many peripherals. And like you're going for watches will be another one, and appliances, appliance computing is really going to start taking off.
Yeah, and they're all going to integrate together. They're all going to communicate,
which is bad for Apple, to be honest, because I don't think they're into that. Maybe they will be, but I think like Android and Microsoft definitely. Or I should say Google, definitely have that vision, and they see it and are pushing. I mean, Google already, they made that presentation about smart appliances and like smart light bulbs and stuff, and you know, Microsoft made those concept videos. I don't see Apple doing that.
Except the only, okay, wait a second. Which one of these three companies, Apple, Google, and Microsoft, mm-hmm. has actually put hardware into their devices specifically designed to communicate with peripherals? Only one. That's Apple. They're pushing the Bluetooth 4.0 like savages, and the only reason why you do that is to communicate with peripheral devices. Now, obviously, they're going to integrate that into their own peripherals, but I think the entire intention is to start tying together other devices, communicating through other channels to your centralized device. I mean, I think that, you know,
yeah,
and people
I guess.
Are gonna...
I could see, yes, that is an option. Now, if I had a choice, let's say I'm on a Windows, I'm in the Windows ecosystem, you know, Tile, Metro, whatever. I'm on my computer. I've got that cool. I go to my phone. All my data is synced, you know, SkyDrive, whatever. You know, same interface. It's all there. That's awesome. I hop into my car. My dashboard is all Tiles and Windows Live. It's not based on my phone and based on its battery life. It's connected to the computer, which is, by the way, is synced with, you know, SkyDrive or whatever, you know, Microsoft services they're offering. And, you know, and so it's got all my driving information, which I can go back to my computer and I could look up or, you know, whatever. I can, someone else who's, I'm sharing location with it. It's not through my phone. It's through my car. And so they can see where I'm driving and who knows, maybe even see how fast I'm going, which maybe that's too much, but whatever, you know, friends can look up that information or you could see it on other devices. And I think I would rather have that. I realize that's a ton for like Microsoft and other companies to manage, for sure. And maybe that's why it doesn't work out. But I'd prefer that kind of thing where they're all in the same ecosystem. They're all connected to the same cloud network, but they are discrete, you know, programs. They're not all having to run through my phone, you know, because if your battery dies or, you know, whatever, that would stink.
I agree with you completely. And my only defense, well, my only point was, I think, and people are probably going to get upset about the idea that Apple being the only one doing this, because they're clearly not the only one that are pursuing this, but I think Apple has clearly, they put technology into their devices specifically to allow them to communicate with third-party peripherals very, very, very easily and efficiently. And
I wonder if that's just one of those things that I'd love to learn more about their logic behind that. Like, did they just put it in there because like it's cool and it's got, and it's a battery, it saves battery life and that's what we care about, so we did it? Or, and they're like, and people will use it how they use it. Or do they have some specific use cases in mind and they're working with other companies behind the scenes to make some pretty cool announcements?
Well, I think
I could see for them it was literally just a battery life play. I would not put that past them.
Well, I guess what my point would be is that there are already tons of devices. You know, the easiest way to connect a peripheral to your iPhone is through Bluetooth.
Right.
To actually go through the 32-bit or 32-pin connector is almost impossible because you have to go through their whole registration.
I totally
and everything
agree.
It's ridiculous. And so, yeah, I think they put 4.0 in there because it was such a battery saver. But the point is that they're investing heavily in it. They realize that this is where the technology is going. This is how people are connecting.
Okay.
Now, I don't necessarily think – they're going to really favor things that are simple. If it works simply, then, yeah, sure, go for it. We'll support you. But if it's complicated and difficult, it uses all sorts of different you know, whatever. How about you not do that? it's going to be Apple's attitude, I think. But my point is that I think all three of them have strong positions that are going to lead them down a path that will allow them to integrate easily. You know, and you know, I think that's where we're going. 5 years.
So, if Google's the only one with wearable glasses 5 years from now, and it requires Android, I'm going to have trouble staying in the Apple ecosystem, just to be honest with you.
And I think Apple will figure that out really, really fast, and they will get on board.
I mean, and the glasses got to be cool. I don't know what my minimal viable product requirements are for that, because just taking pictures is not quite enough for me. I'm not quite that cool. But I don't know.
Google clearly imagines more than
if
that.
If I can watch movies, oh man.
So yeah, I would love that. 3D movies alone, and I think that to me, yeah, I don't know.
Dude, there's so many possibilities. Imagine you're watching a TV show, and you know, and you throw on I don't know what's a TV show now? It's on television.
Community.
Thank you. And you're watching Community, and while you're watching it, you throw on the Community app, and it can immediately detect what episode you're on and whatever. And then, you know, as a certain scene comes up, you could be like, give me some interesting director information, you know, what some behind-the-scenes information, or they could do their product placement, whatever.
You could be sitting there, you could be watching a scene, and you could be like, yeah, Google that person. You know, I want to know more information.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You know. So I think those are some cool places. But all right. Cool. I'm still waiting for them to come up with the different types of, stuff that glass that you can see through is cool. Now I want glass that you can touch and manipulate, and that kind of stuff would be cool as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Someday.
So I wanted to, we talked about this briefly, and I wanted to pay it off quickly because we've been talking for a while about why companies build stuff in China.
Oh yeah,
China has like one of the only rare earth mines in the world. It's the biggest in the world. Oh. They're producing like crazy, and because it's in such high demand, China has put a cap on how much any individual company can buy from China. So basically what they've said is if you want to export all of this, one of the rare earths that we use. Right. Well, it's like neodymium is really, really common in
magnets. About unobtainium? Is that there?
Believe it or not, unobtainium is a made-up element for the movie Avatar.
Man, it seems so real.
I know. But it's a rare earth. It's a rare earth element, and there's a couple, but neodymium's the big one, one of the big ones, because it's used in almost every electronic device. And one of the big problems is they're trying to figure out other ways to kind of get around the fact that you basically have to go through China, but nobody can quite figure out anything, especially at the volumes that they need. And since you can't export it in, like, you can't export enough to build iPads in America. So basically, China has very effectively forced America to manufacture in China. And it's gotten to the point where I guess the president, the POTUS, is has started talking with like UN and trying to work out trade deals, because they think it's pretty messed up, which it kind of is. brilliant, but they're using their advantage to their advantage.
Very smartly.
Yeah. So, but that's why we build everything in China. Now, the reason why this is related to the other article you brought up, where yes, James Cameron, who directed Avatar, the movie where they mined a distant world for unobtainium, is part of the group that is, along with a couple of Google co-founders, are trying to figure out how to fly to the asteroid belt and mine the asteroids. And the reason why this is a big deal is because it is theorized that in many of these asteroids, there will be really, really, really high concentrations of rare earth elements that effectively make them common.
So they don't really know. They're just like, elements. We think it will be.
Well,
analysis that we've done.
Okay, we've sent probes to the asteroids.
Okay, right.
We've done all sorts of. I mean, we know as well as we know. You know, we know.
That's pretty awesome. Just for the record.
We know that that's the case as well as we know anything about space. So it is. It's really exciting. And so basically, what the argument is that if we can build a space elevator or something, you know, whatever, and we can send mining equipment out there, automated mining equipment, and we can mine these asteroids and bring it back, all of a sudden, you know, whatever, China, do whatever you want. We've got our own, but essentially what it's doing is it looks like what they're really pushing is not necessarily to build spaceships to fly to, fly to the asteroid belt. What they're really pushing for is to put together a brain trust to try to figure out how to do that. And, you know, they're going to really put in some serious money to figure out if there's a financially viable way to do it. And I am willing to bet, okay, this is my 100-year prediction. I'm willing to bet quite a bit of money that the reaction...
Today's dollars?
Yes.
Is it going to be adjusted for inflation?
Yes. Okay. So it won't be worth very much, you know, 100 years from now. But thank you for clarifying.
I want to know what you're actually putting on the line here.
Good point. They're going to try to build a space elevator. I almost guarantee it. And I think to a large extent, I know there are already many initiatives to actually do that as a in the private sector, and not doing it publicly, so not making NASA do it. And the entire purpose of it is to go fly to the moon or fly to the asteroid belt in a financially feasible manner to go and mine the solar system for all the stuff that we don't have here. And that could be used for power, that could be used. There's stuff on, there's endless supplies of some types of hydrogen that are isotopes of hydrogen that would be great for generating massive amounts of power using nuclear fusion. It's because it doesn't generate as much radiation, so we can control it better, and we can create all sorts of heat, and it's awesome. Obviously, we could go to the asteroid belt. So I do think that what we're going to find out within 10 years is that we need to build a space elevator.
Wow.
And I got a feeling that there is going to be, in the next 20 or 30 years, there's going to be a billions and billions and billions of dollars investment in the infrastructure to do that. And we're going to start going to space again. I think that's what everybody's getting behind, you know, secretly behind closed doors. And well, not really that secretly, but that's the whispers. That's the reality of the finances, is that we can't explode ourselves into space like we've been doing for the last 40 years. We need a more elegant solution, and that's the one that we have the technology for, that's the one that we have the engineering for, and that's the next step. Pretty exciting.
That is exciting. That's very cool. I like it. Well, cool, dude. Anything else going on in your life?
I finished editing my book today. I'm ready to start making, I finished marking up my book, and let me tell you, it's good. I forgot how much I like it, which so I get to, obviously, I bought Word, so I get to start editing, doing the final edits.
Were you going through a hard copy or a digital copy?
Yeah, no, I printed it out. It costs about $23 to print it out.
Wow.
It's ridiculously expensive. But I've had that one copy printed out for probably a year now. And I just finally started cranking through it. So
cool.
Yeah, pretty good. I like it. I highly recommend everybody listening reads it when I publish it. It's coming.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That is very
How about cool. you?
So, how do I want to say this? I didn't start making an app, but I started making an app. But it's starting
nice.
It's starting out as a web page, and will eventually be converted into an app because I know how to do web programming. Woo. I can see my vision come to life that way. And more importantly, I can start using it right away and then slowly turn it into an app. It's a dumb app. Well, it's not dumb. It's simple. It's just a mileage tracker. You know, when you stop at a gas station, you want to know, how many gallons am I filling up? How much am I paying? You know, that kind of stuff. And
That'd be awesome.
Well, yeah. Well, because I was doing some gas analysis, and all I had was the cost. I didn't have any of that other information. And me being a data geek that I am, I wasn't satisfied. So I was like, I'm going to start tracking this stuff. And I didn't want to have to get a little paper book to do it. So I started looking online for actual, apps to track this. And the ones that are free are not that awesome. And the one that actually is the most popular one that costs $3 is also not super awesome.
Yeah.
So I don't want to belittle what they're doing. They're good apps. They do a lot of things. They're just not designed for what I wanted out of it. It's in some ways they're way overkill. And, for example, there's a lot of them where they will track your business trips. as opposed to your personal travel so that you can expense it correctly. And I'm like, I don't care about that. I don't need that. And so that's where like 90% of the where the emphasis is. And yeah. So I just don't need that. And so I was like, that sounds like an easy enough app to make. I'm going to try doing it. So nice. I mocked up a web page already. It doesn't actually work. It just looks pretty. And yeah. But it looks cool.
You'll have to give me the you'll have to throw me the URL when we're offline.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't want to get overwhelmed by everybody. And then yeah, and so I think this week I'm going to have it so it actually functions and works and I can start using it, and then I'll go from there. I think that's cool. What I'm going to do this week. I don't know. I have other stuff on my plate.
Yeah.
Too. Cool. Awesome possum. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. I hope that you enjoyed this new format. We want to hear back from you. You know, did you like it? Did you hate it? Should we do more of it? We don't know. We'll probably talk about it, too, and decide what works best for us and probably even tweak it more. Be my guess, but we'll see. So thank you for enjoying this experiment. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Silence. Man.
Wait, are we starting at the top?
Oh, yeah, because it cut you off right in the middle of your...
Oh, okay.
Your spiel.
Okay, well, I'll get my typos right this time, then.
Okay.